Okay. So, what happens when we bring awareness to time? That's the practice that we do at this time of year, at the turn of the year, as the year comes to an end, and we start a new year with the days of awe. I'm not asking when we bring awareness to time, like when we realize that, when we realize that we're late for a deadline, we have to get somewhere on time, and we feel that anxiety, I'm already late, I'm not going to make it. Rather, I mean, what happens when we find ourselves reading the ancient words of Torah, like the ones Yocheved brought into our awareness in last week's discussion, when we read about Moses begging God to give him more time as he reaches the end of his life, and we feel in this moment today that same intense longing to be given more time to live and to thrive, the same longing that Moses articulated and that was transcribed into words over 2,000 years ago. It's not coincidence that in our Torah cycle, Moses is nearing the end of his life, the end of his journey, doing a life review, as many people do as they reach the end of their lives, and preparing the next generation to enter a new territory at the same time we are reaching the end of our calendar cycle and reflecting on the past year to prepare to enter the new year. The conjunction of these two spinning cycles of the calendar of Torah readings and the calendar of seasons and holidays is what Reb Moshe calls our Jewish gyroscope, what keeps us in balance as we're whirling through the year and spinning through space. It's particularly at this time of the year, on our journey from Tisha B'Av to Rosh Hashanah, and then to Yom Kippur and Sukkot and Simchas Torah, that our awareness is brought to these aspects of time. The enduring past that is still part of our present, the anticipated future that informs our actions in each moment, what we do for the next generation. During these days, many of us reread Rabbi Alan Liu's book, This Is Real, and You Are Completely Unprepared, The Days of Awe as a Journey of Transformation. With this simultaneously ancient and modern journey in mind, I've also been listening to a series of interviews called The Hope Portal by Krista Tippett. How do we experience hope in dark times? In one interview, the words of Joy Harjo of the Muscogee Creek Nation, a musician, visual artist, and former U.S. poet laureate, her words illuminated for me the sacred nature of our relationship with time. Krista Tippett describes Jo Harjo. From the beginning of her life, from childhood, and even before, she has carried and retained a sense of space and time and life that is so much vaster than the present circumstances. She uses this evocative phrase for the sense of time she knows and she li and lives. She calls it the whole of time, WHOLE. What she does, says Krista Tippett, what she does is that she reminds me of Einstein in this way. The way Einstein reimagined the reality of time, which is quite different from how we perceive it with our senses. Time, he reminded science, is not an arrow moving forward. It is relative, not fixed. Seen at a deep level, it is not a compartmentalized past present, and future. Past, present, and future are all happening, interacting with each other all the time. And we actually know this. We experience it constantly in our thoughts and in our hearts and in our lives. But the way we structure the modern world and our daily lives hasn't caught up with this fundamental reality. We are living in a Newtonian world of calendars and clocks and deadlines and hard stops. Years ago, Tippett said, when I did a show about Einstein and spoke with another physicist about Einstein's sense of time, this physicist said that what Einstein really did with high physics is restore time to the heart of nature, where it had always been in traditional cultures, in human cultures, and that is time as seasonal, cyclical, generational. Those are her words. And that, of course, is the sense of time that we may for a moment touch or glimpse when we immerse ourselves in the cycle of traditional rituals that take us on this journey of transformation through the days of awe. To paraphrase Rabbi Alan Liu, during this passage from late summer into fall, as we approach the days of awe, we journey from the destruction of Tisha B'Av, from the prophet's words of admonition to their words of consolation. We enter the month of Elul, during which the daily blast of the shofar reminds us that time is passing, our lives are passing. If there is anyone we need to forgive, anything we need to ask forgiveness for, anything we need to say to our loved ones, we should say it now, as we never know what day will be our last. Yom Kippur reminds us to live each moment as if it could be our last. What would we be doing differently if the shofar blasted every day, every hour, reminding us of the precious gift of each day of life? What preoccupations would not be worth dwelling on? What resentments would not be worth carrying to the grave? But contemplation is not enough, as our forebears knew. In Jewish ritual, we enact our own death in order to experience rebirth and entry into the world anew. On Yom Kippur, we experience the enactment of death in wearing the kittel that many people wear, the kittel that they will be buried in, which is a very, very stark reminder of our mortality. We don't eat, we don't engage in life-giving activities. And then, with the rebirth after Yom Kippur, we build a sukkah, a house that is far flimsier than the walls of the temple and the city that crumbled on Tisha B'Av. But paradoxically, as Rabbi Liu points out, being out in the open, no longer protected by solid walls, we feel safer. This paradox that we embody by eating or sleeping in the sukkah is a metaphor for our hearts. Our meditation teachers, as well as psychotherapists, remind us of the strength in vulnerability and the equanimity of relinquishing our defensiveness. We feel truly safe with people we love when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, to be known, to be open enough to risk feeling hurt. In this week's Parsha, Ekev, Moses continues his final speech, his urgent attempt to convey in words all that the next generation needs to know as they cross over into the land where they hope to find safety and freedom. He exhorts the Israelites over and over to love God and serve God with all your heart and all your being. And in doing so, he uses a new metaphor to describe this experience of opening. In Deuteronomy, we find the words, "Cut away, therefore, the thickening around your hearts and stiffen your necks no more." It is the thickening around our hearts, this stiffening of our spirit, the walls we put up to protect ourselves. These walls also prevent us from feeling held and nurtured in an indescribable connection to something much greater than ourselves, feeling held in the moment-to-moment unfolding of space and time. Perhaps in fleeting moments, we touch that experience in our sitting practice. And then at the end of Sukkot, our holiday, and our holiday calendar and Torah calendar, these two cycles merge in the moment that we finish reading the Torah scroll and then roll it back to the beginning to begin again on Simchas Torah. The end of something makes way for the beginning of something new. So we could describe the series of religious observances from Tisha B'Av through Simchas Torah as a practice of bringing awareness to time, to the way we experience the whole of time. We could perhaps say not only the journey through the days of awe, but all religious observance and traditional practices help us enter into the spacious awareness of time. The same spaciousness that Joy Harjo describes as her experience of indigenous practice. Because all religions address the loneliness and terror that we can experience when our uniquely human minds, with our uniquely human minds, because we, unlike most living creatures, have the capacity to understand and anticipate our own mortality, along with the longing to live longer. We can imagine approaching the end of life, the sadness, the loss, without a spiritual practice to expand our awareness of the continuity of time and the interconnectedness we have through all those we touch. We could feel despair about the fleeting nature of our human lives. So as a counterpoint, I will finish with a thought experiment that Krista Tippett included in this podcast with Joy Harjo. It's a thought exercise she learned from her teacher, John Paul Lederach, who has dedicated his life to peace building and conflict transformation. And this practice was passed on to him from his teacher, the Quaker sociologist Elise Boulding, who worked to create the academic discipline of peace and conflict studies. So this is the exercise. It's called the 200-year present. It's a way to cultivate a reality-based, longer sense of time and ancestry and the possibility that comes with that. First, take your mind back to the youngest age you can remember and the oldest person you can remember holding you, and that moment of being held. Calculate back to their date of birth, their year of birth, roughly. Second, bring to mind the youngest person you have held in your arms and the day to which they might live, maybe 80, 85 years would be a life expectancy of someone born now. The span of time that you will be able to calculate from these two, from the older person's date of birth and the young person's projective lifespan, could be roughly a 200-year present that is very tangible, a 200-year present that your life on this earth spans, that you have literally touched, and been touched by. So let's sit with that awareness for a moment, resting in your awareness of interconnectedness across time, of being held by loved ones and by the unfolding of time.